Welcome to Free for All Fridays on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. Here's your host, Amanda Galbraith.
We'll make a slight correction of that. I'm Dave Kaufman, sitting in for Amanda today once again. Welcome, bienvenue from the coolest city in Canada, Montreal. The last time I felt like I was in my comfort zone, I had John Moore on, a former Montrealer, and I had Elias Makos on, who is a current and forever Montrealer who hosts on CJAD. I'm going to have it a little bit different today, which I appreciate, because Monday is Election Day. And my feeling is that our two guests today, who come at us from different parts of the country, may have different views on what matters. And I think that's what's most important right now, is that we can get this cross-country view as we take the temperature from east to west. I guess I'm the furthest east. Joining me from the middle, and I bet you Jerry Agar likes being called from the middle, the host of the Jerry Agar Show on News Talk 1010 in Toronto. A pleasure to make your acquaintance, sir.
Well, first of all, I was promised Amanda Galbraith.
I don't know what to tell you.
How do you look in pumps?
Take up your issue with Mike Van Dixon, not me.
Do you look good in pumps?
It's been a while, but I have to say, Jerry, who do you know that's worn pumps since COVID started? This is everybody's in flats right now. So
yeah, probably even
you
Amanda.
Know, in 6 months, invite me to Harbor 60 if it's still open. I'll come down the 401 and you can test it out for yourself.
All right. I suppose you think I'm coming from the second coolest city in the country. But anyway, good to be with you. Thank you.
I have a lot of love for Vancouver, but Denis Coderre, who's running for mayor of Montreal once again, once said that the reason that Toronto is so cool is because 500,000 Montrealers moved there. So maybe we'll stick with that one. And before I offend too many of our listeners, let's also welcome in Ryan Price, the news director and afternoon drive host in Canada's prettiest city at CFAX 1070 in Victoria, BC. Hello, Ryan.
Well, it's Canada's soggiest city today, but I'll take it.
Okay, well, it's back to being summer over here, and I am champing at the bit to hit the golf course after the show today. But in the meantime, there is a lot to get to. We'll have some that is frivolous, some that is serious, and we will start with the issue that is affecting every single one of us from sea to sea to sea. Election Day is Monday. Let's start by I know predictions are for, what was it, fools and horses? Let's start with that, and let's see how big of a foolish horse all three of us can be. We'll start with Ryan. What are your predictions for Monday?
Well, I'm actually kind of pleased with myself, because I sort of feel like it's going the way I thought it would. When the election was first called and the Liberals took that dive in the polls and the Conservatives had that surge, I felt that the Conservative surge would probably scare enough progressive voters into strategic voting, and the polls are starting to show that Conservative surge go down. I don't know exactly what's going on. I'm sure there's a ton there, but it definitely seems like we're heading to what I thought was going to be happening, and that is a Liberal minority propped up by the NDP back in Ottawa.
Oh,
that's
good.
My prediction.
So $600 million for nothing then, Jerry, if Ryan's right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, but that's not that brave a prediction to make, I wouldn't be totally shocked if it ended up somehow being a Conservative minority. I mean, if I had to, with a gun to my head, make a prediction, I'll make two. One is there'll be a minority government. Which one it will be, I would leave open, but would be more surprised if it was a Conservative, as we see things playing out right now. And the only other prediction that I'm confident in making, I know it ticks off a lot of people, so I'm quite happy to do it again, and that is that the PPC will elect no one, including Bernier. The prediction for the riding he's running in is the Conservative victory.
Yeah, and that area, of course, near Quebec City is one that is often contested and fought over, and it's the Conservative belt in Quebec. I don't think you're wrong on that, Jerry. I don't think the PPC is going to do anything other than agitate and disrupt, as we've seen in this election. And I've seen many people much smarter than I say, well, very interesting place we'd be in right now if Justin Trudeau had fulfilled his 2015 campaign promise. If there was first past the post, Jerry, we'd be looking at 20 to 25 PPC seats right now and a very different world in Ottawa next week.
Yeah, well, if wishes were horses, beggars would ride, as they say. People always say, well, yeah, sure, but if it was based on popular vote, then the Conservatives would have been the government. We have the system we have, and under the system we have, it may well turn out that more people vote Conservative again, and we still get a liberal minority, and the PPC thing is a tempest in a teapot.
I thought that it was shaping up that way until what we saw happen in Alberta occurred. And we can get to that a little bit later on in the show today. But I figure that the votes for the Conservatives will go down in Alberta. And I didn't see that happening this way. I thought that Mr. O'Toole was going to get an even bigger share than Mr. Scheer did. And the numbers in Alberta and Saskatchewan last time were so tilted towards the Conservatives that that's what brought the popular vote to the Blues. Overall, gentlemen, what are your thoughts on this campaign? Do you think it was the waste of time that Erin O'Toole tried to slate it as? Do you think the Canadians should have a bit more of a say into how the country is run, both for this fourth wave and however many waves are next, as well as the post-COVID recovery? Ryan?
I think it was completely a waste of time. I mean, I know the Prime Minister today has been trying to couch that, saying, look, you know, we had a great policy debate. We discussed issues facing the country and we're better for it. But I don't think so. I think this was just a wrong time for election. We've gone through all of this. And if my prediction is right, and I know it's not a bold prediction, it's kind of a safe bet. But if I'm right, we're going to end up exactly where we were. What did we really gain other than, you know, a failed chance at a Liberal majority, which I think, considering how annoyed we all are with this, it makes sense that we're probably not going to give him that majority. Where will we go after that? There could be some interesting effects. I'm interested to see how this affects the Green Party. I'm sitting in the capital of Greenland here on the west coast of Canada. This is where the two remaining elected Green MPs are right here on Vancouver Island, where I'm sitting. Will they be able to hold on to their seat amidst the Green Party turmoil? This election got called right in the middle of their worst moment. So what does this mean for them? The PPCs, what do they do to the Conservatives? There will be some interesting effects. Will the Bloc have a giant surge because of that debate moment that everybody's still talking about from last week? Yes, it's going to change the makeup of Parliament somewhat, and it's not going to be like a complete back to where it was. But in the end, I think if we have a Liberal minority, maybe even a weakened one with the NDP there, we're going to be back where we were. A waste of time. That's my thought.
Ryan, I can't believe you're bringing up the Quebec issue right now, that it's 6,000 kilometers away from me, and you feel that too. Jerry, does it drive you as crazy as it must so many other Canadians to have that be the focus of this campaign?
I've said before, thanks for the opportunity to say it again, had I been the moderator, the moment that I heard I'm not very much interested in running Canada, I would have said thank you for both the honest and realistic response. You're now excused from the rest of the proceedings. There's no reason to have the Bloc involved in a national English debate. It's not a national party. It's a one province party. I don't think the Greens should have been there either. I think the leading three should have been there fighting it out. Maybe it would have improved that deadly debate. But that said, you know, your initial question here had to do with what's the play here if all that happens is we come back with a Liberal minority?
Yes.
I think it is all of those of us who are not going to vote Liberal. I'm not very secret about where I come from. Those of us who are not going to vote Liberal are going to say, what did we do that for and waste $600 million and a whole bunch of time and effort that could have been spent on other things? And Trudeau and the rest of the Liberals are going to stomp around saying, see, we showed during a crisis that Canadians really want us.
Ryan?
I also just am bitter that in a moment where the pandemic was knowingly heating up, because the fourth wave and the Delta wave was coming at us, and there's just so much tension and fatigue, and Canadians are angry at each other for reasons because we're just so stressed and worn out for so many things. To throw an election on that, sorry, I don't think I'm answering the question. I'm just expressing my frustration and bitterness.
That's fine.
It's still there. It's still there.
And I think you're reflecting what a lot of Canadians think and feel right now. And I think that as we take the temperature from coast to coast here, I think that it's really interesting to see that pretty much to a man, Canadians are sick and tired of this. We have extreme COVID fatigue. And I think that the way out of this is through this, right? And I don't know if necessarily an election being called was the way to do this, but I question whether what we're seeing in Alberta will affect what we're seeing Monday and maybe take Jerry's visions of a Conservative minority and throw them out the window. You're listening to Free for All Fridays. And when we come back, we will talk about Alberta and the tragedy that is going on over there and whether their handling of the COVID crisis will change the way that people cast their ballots on Monday. I'm Dave Kaufman in for Amanda Galbraith on Free for All Fridays. You're listening to the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
The Free For All Friday Roundtable continues on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
And I'm Dave Kaufman in for Amanda Galbraith. Hope you're having a pleasant Friday as we bring you our pre-election Free For All Friday. And segment two will be election focused as well. There's no escaping the politicization of COVID-19. I think there may have been a Sunny Ways-esque hope that that wouldn't be the case. But here we are, and every election has a surprise. Every election has a twist and a turn. Some argue that it was when Saatchi Curl asked Yves-Francois Blanchet that very pointed question in the English debate. I would say no, it is what we are seeing in Alberta that could, in fact, turn the tide on Monday. And this all began on Wednesday when Alberta Premier Jason Kenney announced that his province would enter a state of public health emergency.
Today, the government has declared a state of public health emergency.
It was the third time that Alberta had declared a state of emergency since the pandemic began, and the premier apologized for believing that they could have an open summer.
I know that we had all hoped this summer that we could put COVID behind us once and for all. That was certainly my hope, and I said so very clearly. It is now clear that we were wrong, and for that, I apologize.
Kenny and his government were wrong in moving the COVID-19 endemic ahead of the fourth wave. They, of course, had the what I likened this morning on John Moore's show to George Bush standing on the aircraft carrier with the mission accomplished.
Oh, I've used that too.
Him.
I've used that too. It's perfect.
Yeah, Ryan, it's unfortunately, and we're with Ryan Price and Jerry Agar here on Free For All Friday on the iHeart Canada Talk Radio Network. Unfortunately, when you make hats and posters and T-shirts that say best summer ever, COVID knows one thing, and it's to attack anybody who takes it lightly. And unfortunately, I think that that's what we're seeing here right now. And it has led to a case where this could change the way that the election is laid out. Jerry, before you had said that if you were going to make a prediction, you could see a path towards a conservative minority. Do you think that path gets narrower because of what we've seen in Alberta this week?
First of all, a pox on anybody that politicizes this. And there has been an incredible jump by some politicians and media people to do that. And maybe what some people are saying when they say, well, this is going to hurt the conservatives. That's a lot of that, I think, is wishful thinking. If it does, then the blame's being put in the wrong place. A couple of quick things on that. First of all, why don't you blame the people who refuse to get vaccinated? Maybe that's where the big problem is. These days, the vaccines are available. You obstinate anti-science people who don't get vaccinated are more than enough trouble. So please get out and get vaccinated. Secondly, if people want to say, oh, things went badly for a conservative premier, therefore it will go badly for the Conservative Party, who does Alberta plead now to come to their help? Ontario, which is led by a conservative premier. Oh, I guess that's going to help the Conservatives win then, because Ontario's a winner. Like, what are we doing here?
I like your logic. It moves in a full circle. Ryan, do you think that what Jerry's saying makes sense?
Well, I wonder how much it's going to relate. And what's happening in Alberta, and I want to echo what everybody else is saying. My thoughts first and foremost are with the people who are sick and facing hospital ICUs that are overcrowded and a hospital system that's overburdened. I think that's where my thoughts go first, rather than playing, see what we told you so. But I wonder, the situation in Alberta also is a situation where Jason Kenney is going to be really unpopular with the people who are very pro vaccine mandates, very pro let's do COVID restrictions and get this thing locked down. So they're not going to be happy. All the people who are very freedom, don't tell me what to do government are going to be super unhappy. Everybody in Alberta is going to be hating on the Conservatives. But you know what Alberta will still do? They'll still vote for the Conservatives. So in that province, I don't think it's going to really move the needle politically. I guess it's does the rest of Canada take a look at that and say, there's a Conservative government that's not handling this well. Do we trust this Conservative Aaron O'Toole to lead me through a pandemic? I think that's the danger. I don't know if that's really going to be the major thing that causes a Conservative voter to flip over to the Liberals or the NDP, but I guess there's that risk. And, you know, maybe that's part of the overall sentiment we're seeing, where the Conservative prospects have come down a little bit since earlier in this election. But I don't know. If I had to guess, I'd say this issue alone won't sink them, but it certainly can't help.
Well, it's a combination of things, right? And I think, I mean, right now we see that Max Bernier and his merry band of pranksters are on their way to Alberta right now to try and take advantage of the situation. We had Brian Lilly in the Toronto Sun this morning say that a vote for the PPC is a vote for Justin Trudeau. I don't see how this is not all intertwined. And Jerry, I will respectfully push back just a little bit because I think that the pox is on everybody. COVID has been politicized from the second it started, from the first lockdown. We saw a politicization of COVID. I think that the opening of the Calgary Stampede this summer was politicized, and Aaron O'Toole was there flipping burgers and congratulating Alberta on how they handled the crisis. And once again, I think that any time that anybody is anything other than timid and humble in front of COVID, it comes back to bite them in, well, Nicki Minaj's cousin's sensitive spot.
Yeah. Well, that's why I got vaccinated.
Right.
Because it's just, what am I going to do? Sit here and hope that the virus can't find my house? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And unfortunately, though, we're an angrier country than probably ever since. Oh, I think if we look historically, ever since another guy named Trudeau was the prime minister of this country. So I don't know if there's a tie-in, but just the weariness of the lockdowns and the fear and everything else that has gone along with it. I, as a matter of fact, as a talk show host, have never seen the kind of community anger that I'm seeing right now. And I've been on the air over the last number of decades in both the U.S. and here. It's just astounding on a minute-to-minute basis, especially on my text box incoming as I'm doing the show. There's just so much anger, and people want to take that anger and point the bony finger of blame at somebody. And if they see an opportunity to attach what they think is a fact or a reality to some of their anger, they're going to take it. And right now, I guess it's going to be Alberta.
So great. We've got 3 minutes here to try and solve the world's problems. How do we turn down that temperature? How do we make Canadians less angry? I feel that too, Jerry. Anytime I'm on radio, anytime I open that text message box, it scares me to see how angry people are. How do we make people understand that maybe we are all in this together? Ryan, I will give you this very difficult question first.
Well, and that goes back to the point I made in the last segment, that one of the reasons I'm so upset that there's an election is with tensions and tempers already so flared across the country, an election just blew, you know, oxygen onto that fire. And now you've got all of these angry people texting my inbox as well. There are people on either side. I don't know how we bring this down. I think just getting done with this election will help and stopping with all the politics. But yeah, beyond that, I feel like the cat's a bit out of the bag. And I think the PPC party has been interesting in how much they're grabbing that. And I wanted to make this point quickly that while we talk a lot about the PPC taking votes away from the Conservatives, there have been a few PPC events here, at least where I am, where you look at the demographic there, and it's not all, hard right-wing Conservative-looking people. There are people from across the spectrum who are anti-vaccine passports or mandates or whatever is the COVID topic that they're against. But I feel
it's not a one-tent party.
Yeah, exactly. And they with that issue are really drawing a lot of those people in. So I think that's an interesting thing as well, just how much anger there is across the spectrum. And that makes it more complicated. It's not just one spectrum of the political wing that is doing this. It's people all over the place. And I have no answer for how you address that. I just know that the election fueled it, and I hope we can start to simmer down once it's done.
So, Jerry, I know that you and I come at things from a different side. From what I've listened to on the radio, I mean, there's no doubt that we swing from the left and from the right, and yet I believe that we can have a conversation where we can find common ground. This is something that I find the Canadians are having a lot of trouble with right now. What can we do? And if we make this instead of a larger scale issue, and I know we've got 30 seconds here, but what can we do to turn that temperature down and show Canadians that we are all in this together?
I think that Ryan is right. When the election goes away, some of this might dampen down just a little bit,
which is
another reason that we shouldn't have had the election. I also agree that the PPC is not just dragging from the Conservatives. They may have no consequence in that regard. But one of the problems I think that will continue to exist is we're not all in this together. The government is experiencing no pain. Nobody got laid off. Nobody got cut in pay. Nope. All of the pain goes to the public, the private sector public, which will pay off all of the debt in the future. We are not
Jerry, thank
in this
you guys.
Together.
That's, when we come back, we'll talk about my alma mater.
The Free for All Friday Roundtable continues on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, Canada. I'm Dave Kaufman in for Amanda, along with Jerry Agar, the host of the Jerry Agar Show on News Talk 1010 in Toronto, and Ryan Price, the news director and drive show host on CFAX 1070 in Victoria, British Columbia. Our next segment is one that producer Samantha Pope and I spent a long time trying to figure out how we could talk about it. I am a graduate of the University of Western Ontario. I started there 21 years ago. Three of the most fun, exciting years of my life, something I've been thinking about a lot lately, gentlemen, because, well, we just had the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and my memories of that day are very much tied to being in school and being in class and watching the world change from my perch in London, Ontario. And I have a very good friend in Montreal who was so overjoyed to be driving his daughter to her first year at Western just a few short weeks ago. And he showed me the poem that he wrote her as he was sending his daughter off into the world. And I was filled with all of these wonderful memories of the time that my mom drove me from Montreal all the way to London and dropped me off at Medway, which was my residence that year, and how very quickly I wanted nothing to do with my mom, and I was off with my friends, and that was the party, and I was off to Frosh Week, and it was just the best, guys. And when I think about what my friend's daughter's experience has been, and I thank God that she's not staying at the same residence I was, because that residence has now allegations of up to 30 drug-related sexual assaults occurring during the orientation week. There is a lot to unpack in what we are seeing happening at Western. There was a student was murdered off campus. There are allegations, an incredible piece in the London Free Press with research and notes from those at the UWO newspaper. Incredible to think of these students being thrust into this story and having to cover it with a level of detail and sensitivity that we don't often see in the press. Needless to say, I want to talk about this, and I want to talk about this culture of misogyny. Evan Solomon had a guest on his show this week, the VP of University Affairs for the Western's Student Council. Her name is Ziana Kotadia. Let's hear from her now.
Our community is heartbroken. Our community is disgusted, angry. Many of our students don't feel safe on campus right now. It's been a tumultuous last few days.
And needless to say, she says that students are exhausted.
This is something that we know has been an ongoing issue at Western University. And actually, in the 2019 Student Voices on Sexual Violence report, we know that Western University had 71.6 percent of students say that they had disclosed experiences of sexual harassment. And this was actually the highest percentage of all the publicly assisted universities that were surveyed.
I don't want to just call out Western. I think that this is a problem not just in Canada, but really any and everywhere. I think that there's an aspect of herd mentality in here. I think that there is there are some major problems on the Western side, things that they have addressed and said that they'll change. But thousands of students walked out today, walked out of their classes and said that they are not going to stand for this anymore and this rape culture needs to end. Ryan, what are we missing here? Is it something that we're not teaching young men?
I'm horrified that there's so much more talk about this already, so much more pushback on that kind of culture and sexual misconduct. I feel like there's, you know, a generation of young men who hopefully had come up in that, and the fact that this is still happening is really disheartening. But on the other side, I feel like we have a university campus full of kids who are walking out. I'm saying kids. I know they're adults. You know, a university of young people who are walking out to say this is completely unacceptable. And I guess that's the one thing I take heart from, as disappointing as it is that such a situation can still be playing out, in not just a small way, but in what seems like a systemic awful way at that campus and probably elsewhere. The fact that the pushback grows, that there's a student body that's out there taking the day off class to say, no, this is unacceptable. We won't put up with this. I'm hoping that that and more of that is what we need. I think we have to continue as a society to publicly denounce this, make sure that we're saying it's wrong, and that there's no shame for coming up if you're a victim and reporting this, that if you are a perpetrator, you are not acceptable. And I think the more that society can get behind that, and we're seeing that with today's walkout, I think that's the right direction. It doesn't help what's happened, and doesn't help me feel any better that this is still happening, but I feel like that's what we have to continue to do.
Jerry, one of the things that concerned me the most was in reading that London Free Press piece and seeing how few of the students want to come forward, how they believe that it will lead to nothing if they come forward other than a waste of potentially 2 years of their lives where this gets kicked around a court system, and statistically they don't see any results anyway.
Sure. I think all of that is true, and everything that you guys have said, I don't disagree with. I'm going to throw a wrench into the thing in just a second. But there have also been, I think, already this year, 5 arrests. And when there have been arrests, you've got a pretty serious thing going on there from the standpoint that this is not something in the background. This is not something of someone who's afraid to come forward. And I don't know anything about the university, so I'm going from what people have been telling me the last few days. And one of the real consistent messages that came across is, well, everybody knows what it's like there. Well, then why does it continue to be like that? A, I wouldn't send my daughter there. I don't know that I want my son to go there, first of all. And if that's the case, if everybody knows that, then why hasn't the university fixed it? Like, I don't understand that at all. I mentioned the arrest specifically because this story that keeps going around about 30 women were drugged and raped. The police have no complainant there. So how is it possible somebody has come up with the specific number of 30 if there are no reports from an actual person? And it's not true that every single woman who is violated won't come forward. Not one of them, as far as I know yet, has come forward. So who came up with the number 30? What are they basing that on? What I want to do is concentrate on what's really happening, do something about what's really happening, but let's not just take some internet rumor and start acting as though it's a fact.
No, Jerry, and that's why I was super clear to use the word allegation. And if you
yeah, but
read,
it's gotten worse than that. It's not just an allegation. It's received truth by too many people.
But if I may, the London police are investigating allegations of up to 30 drug-related sexual assaults. I saw an interview with a SOF, which is a second-year student who in normal times would be living in these residences and providing guidance to the first-year students. And because of COVID, they're not allowed to live on campus. They do something called a SOF circle. This is something that was not around when I was there 20 years ago. But because these druggings are so prevalent, what we're hearing is that SOFs will surround these students while they're passed out so that they can receive medical attention without being filmed on people's phones. The 30 number, from what I can understand, comes from the amount of people that were passed out either in the quad or on the road leading up to it. Bodies were strewn left, right, and center. People are afraid. And I can appreciate people not wanting to talk about something, especially if all they remember is waking up in the middle of the street and not knowing what happened. Back to what I said about the SOFs, though, because I think that that's an important part of this that's missing. I don't understand how a university could not have safeguards like a mentor in place. The idea of just letting all of these kids in and having a zoo without any zookeepers seems absolutely careless and irresponsible to me. Just for example, there is a class or a moment in orientation week where consent is taught. Yes, it's crazy to think that an 18 or 19 or 20-year-old kid would have to learn what consent is, but you know what? That's where we are today. And normally that is done in everybody sits down, we are doing this right now before we all head off to whatever sanctioned event we have. This time it was a watch it if you want. I don't understand how Western could allow this to happen. That's, I think, and unfortunately, guys, we're running out of time on this segment. And
okay, let me ask you something quick.
Yeah, go ahead, Jerry. Go ahead, please.
Okay, you're the grad.
Yeah.
Okay, would you send a child there?
No.
Okay.
And it kills me because I know my buddy is listening, and I know that all he wants to do is go pick up his daughter. This was not the Western that I went to. But I would not. You want to put your kid in a situation where everything is set up for them to succeed. This is not that situation. You're listening to Free For All Fridays on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. We will come back and talk about the error of catalog and list.
Free For All Friday Roundtable continues on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
And I'm Dave, speaking over Aretha, Cardinal Sin, as we wrap up Free For All Friday here on the iHeartRadio Talk Network, along with Jerry Agar and Ryan Price. And gentlemen, we are ending on a lighter note today. It is Friday. I want to talk about music. And I love the idea of a list that nobody can agree on. It's as if Rolling Stone said, oh, let's give those radio guys some fodder for the next week. Rolling Stone has updated. They have updated their 500 greatest songs of all time list, the first update since 2004. It's a much more eclectic list than it used to be. The number one song, that's right, you just heard it. It's Aretha's version of Respect. Just to give you a few more, number two, Public Enemies Fight the Power. Number three, Sam Cooke, A Change Is Gonna Come. Number four, Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone. Number five, Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit. The highest rated Beatles song is at number seven, Strawberry Fields Forever. The highest rated Rolling Stone song is Gimme Shelter at number 13. I remember that on the last list, I Can't Get No Satisfaction was number two, and Like a Rolling Stone was number one. Jerry, you had a chance to look at the list. I know we sent it to you yesterday. Yep. Is there anything that jumps out at you as maybe makes you scratch your head? Or you know what? Actually, I'm going to rephrase that. Is your favorite song on this list?
Well, some of my favorite songs are on there. I think when you say it becomes more eclectic, I mean, that's because what do we have? Almost 70 years of history of rock and roll. Like, it's just, you know, you're going to look at that and I'm going to go, I don't even know what some of these songs are anymore. But then the same person who might look at one of those songs and go, you don't know that song? And I could point to a song from the earlier days of rock and roll and they wouldn't know it. The subjectivity, obviously, is massive on something like this. It doesn't make any sense to me that Gimme Shelter beats Satisfaction. I mean, they're both great songs, but that doesn't make any sense. You ever seen the Rolling Stones live?
About 20 times.
Okay. When they play Satisfaction, the show's over, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I mean, right there. But you know what? I'm going to jump up and take another moment here because I want to say something about this kind of thing. Public Enemy is number two there, not necessarily because it's a song everybody goes around singing like you can with Respect, but it's because they're saying this was a seminal song. This was a changing event. Am I right about that?
Sure.
As to where they went with it? Okay. I'm going to lobby for a song nobody knows that should be a huge part of any list of important songs.
What's
in,
that?
In rock and roll. See if you know this. Have you ever heard of Link Ray?
Yes, of course.
Oh, yes. Well,
yes, Ryan? Yes, Link Ray.
Ryan?
And there was a...
Ever heard
Is
of
Ryan
him?
Ryan there.
Oh, sorry. Hey, Link Ray. Tell me about Link Ray.
Okay, you never heard of him. It's okay if
no.
you didn't. All right.
If Ryan, if you've seen Pulp Fiction, you know who Link Ray is.
All right.
Oh, okay. No, I'm following now. Yeah, it just hit me. Yep.
All okay. right.
Link Ray.
All right. So back in the early, early days of rock and roll, Link Ray, an American indigenous musician,
yep,
took a little tiny amplifier, punched holes in the speaker with a pencil, and sat down and did this. That right there, ladies and gentlemen, is the invention of the power chord. And I can name two people who sat up and took notice. You can, in fact, find a video of Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin. Just thrilling to listen to that, even today, to Jimmy Page and Jimi Hendrix went, oh, my God, you can do that with the guitar? A song like that should be high on this list.
I couldn't disagree. You are 100% right, Jerry, and that's what happens. And at least when these lists gets made, and there was a wonderful documentary made about Link Ray and the effect and role of indigenous music on rock and roll, came out a couple of years ago, and I highly recommend it. Ryan, do you have a
and
do you have an addition
after
to the
that
list?
Song? You're talking
it's
about
called,
Rumble.
I am.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
Ryan, where do you stand on this?
I got so many thoughts on this. And by the way, thank you for bringing the real talk to this to the show.
You
now.
You know it, man. You know
yeah.
it.
Okay, well, one, I to start with the positive, I'm very appreciative of the mix of musical genres and styles, and I'm appreciative that there's songs here that I don't really know as well, but that I appreciate are there. But then, why is the only Beatles song at number 7, and why is it Strawberry Fields Forever?
Thank you. I love that song.
Right. I love that song, but it's hardly even the best Beatles song, let alone one of the best songs ever. And then the next Beatles song,
I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Yeah, which also, fine song, but like the Beatles have dozens or more better songs than those two. And I'm not throwing shade at Strawberry Fields or Hold Your Hand, because they're great. But like, how did they end up beating all of the other Beatles songs and all the other songs, period? I feel like that's weird to me. That's my biggest takeaway. I'm happy to see songs that, like you guys were saying, there's some songs here that are there, I think, because of their importance in time. You know, Fight the Power by Public Enemy, probably there for that reason. But if that's one of the driving forces behind this, why is Hey Ya on here at number 10? Which,
because
again,
it's
great
awesome.
Song.
That's right.
It's an awesome song, but like, I don't understand the criteria for getting into this top 10 or top 500 with such a weird mix of reasons. I don't know.
Well, but
it's a great song. I'm not slamming Strawberry Fields, but
right. But it's not A Day in the Life, and it's not.
Yeah.
Look, and for me, it's my favorite Beatles song, and I'd say top 5 song for me all time is Hey Jude. And I know it's cheesy,
sure.
And I know it's not their best song, but on the Dave Kaufman Goosebump meter, it puts them through the roof. I mean, I can knock out my driver's side window from the Goosebumps when Hey Jude comes on.
And when other musicians decide to record a Beatles song, which song is the most covered, the most recorded?
Yesterday,
absolutely. So what are the criteria? Like the criteria I put forth on Link Ray's Rumble is unassailable, by the way, and as a great song. And if your criteria was sort of the popularity of the music, then clearly, again, the number one song, Respect, would be way up high there, but so would Yesterday. People don't walk around singing Strawberry Fields Forever.
No,
exactly.
No, they don't. No, they don't. And this is, but people do walk around singing Robin's Dancing on My Own, which was at number 20, which I heard the Arkells cover at their long weekend at the Budweiser stage in Toronto a couple of weeks ago. But I do find it interesting that Beyonce's and Jay-Z's Crazy in Love is higher on the list than Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody. But you know what? But it
so allows much wrong us, with that.
But as the great Gord Downie used to say, he found error in the role of catalog and list. And the idea that somebody's favorite is not that's the world, right? Jerry's going to like something and I'm going to like something else. And eventually we're going to have to make a list about it, and we're going to get to have such wonderful debates about it. And that's really what it comes down to. And if my hope out of this is that if somebody heard us mention a song that they haven't heard, or they go to this list and then suddenly they're like, oh, I love Outkast's Hey Ya. Why is that? What's that Beach Boys song? God Only Knows. That's right behind it. That must be a good song. Let me go hear that. And then suddenly you've opened up somebody's mind to one of the most beautiful songs of all time.
Well, and you've also made a mistake if not somewhere near the top. And I'll be honest, I didn't go through the 500. I jumped right to the top 50 because I didn't have time to go through all 500. But if in the top 50 you don't have something from the very early seminal days of Elvis Presley, you're just ignoring the history of rock and roll.
Sure. I mean, and I'll just to give you a little
and
hint.
And Chuck Berry.
If you go to number 499, it's Baby Love. Lizzo's Truth Hurts is 497.
What's number 500?
Number 500 is Kanye West's Stronger.
Oh, well, now he wants to grab somebody's microphone that he was only number 500.
Jerry, I'm going to let you finish, but Kanye is one of the greatest artists of all time. Jerry Agar and Ryan Price. Guys, this has been an absolute pleasure. It was really nice to meet you both,
thanks.
And I hope we can do this again sometime. I'm Dave Kaufman. Huge thanks to Nick and Samantha. I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. Take care of each other.